Welcome to Steppin' Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon. Hi, everybody. My name's Sue Supriano, and my guests today are going to talk about walking with a Buddhist group around the world for good causes. And the names of the people are Louise Dunlap and Skip Scheel. Louise is a writer, yoga teacher, and Buddhist, and Skip is particularly a photographer and also a Quaker teacher, and both of them are activists and have been active for many years in many good causes. And since when have you been doing these walks? And you walked, the last walk was what?
Well, the most recent walk was just this year, from January to May, and it focused on nuclear disarmament and native rights. And it carried with it across the United States a flame from Hiroshima that was saved from the fires of Hiroshima by a Japanese family on their Buddhist altar. And that flame at first was saved in anger and hostility and hatred, desire to retaliate. And then over the years, the family worshipped at that altar, prayed over that flame, and it came to mean love, compassion, and a desire for peace. So they made that flame available for people to bring to the United States, probably for the same reasons. And that flame was carried to the American Ground Zero in New York City for a ceremony there. Mm-hmm. So that was the most recent walk mm-hmm. that we've been on.
And the first walk we were on together was actually more of a horseback ride that commemorated the centennial of the Wounded Knee Massacre. And in December 1990, we joined with over 300 Native people and a group organized by Nippon Zenmyo Hoji, the Japanese Buddhist order, and were support people. And Louise walked on part of the journey into the Valley of Wounded Knee to wipe away the tears and mend the sacred hoop.
So you'd like to know a little more about that, I bet.
Yeah, definitely. I've seen people walking around and sometimes even join them and mm-hmm. for a very short mm-hmm. time. I am very curious about that, the Nippon Zen Myoji Buddhist Order,
yes.
That's the name of it.
Yes.
And they're the folks that sing, that chant Nam-myeho Renge-kyo. I know there are many monks all over the world doing these kinds of walks, yeah. And I'm curious about the connection between that and the Nichiren. I'm not sure what the name of it.
Shoshu. Yes, I don't know much of it about the connection, except that both traditions are Japanese and go back to a saint or a Japanese teacher of the 14th century who was actually, you better help me with this, Skip, he was actually much persecuted for his beliefs because he felt Buddhism had gotten off on the wrong track in Japan in that era and that it was an era of declined law. And which I think is very resonant for us today in this country and around the world. And he decided that the Lotus Sutra, a Buddhist teaching that especially emphasizes the potential and the Buddha nature of each human being, he decided that that was the key text that Buddhists should be focusing on. And so Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, I believe, is the first line of that sutra. And that's why it's become the main chant for the group that we walk with, which is a very activist Buddhist order. So both groups chant Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. And the other night we gave our presentation about these walks. There was someone in the crowd who just lit up when we said Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. And she was part of this other group, Nichiren Shoshu. She had never heard of this activist order of monks that do the same chant. And she was so moved. She said it just rocked her to the core to realize that people were going around the world chanting this chant for peace. And not just for inner peace, but for peace in the world. Mm-hmm. So it's a powerful chant.
Yeah. Talk about the many monks who are doing this all over the world. Is that what they do in that order?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, their primary worship mode is building peace pagodas, which are usually very large hemispheres, white, with various Buddhist regalia. And they house a relic of the Buddha. And people venerate the tradition of Buddhism by walking around the pagoda. They also conduct peace walks and pilgrimages. They station themselves in often troubled areas like Sri Lanka. They've attempted to build pagodas in Vietnam, Cambodia, Nicaragua, and elsewhere. They have approximately 70 throughout the world, most of them in Japan. But two of them in the United States in the Northeast, one near Albany, New York, and the other near Amherst in western Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. There are approximately, at this point, 200 monks and nuns throughout the world, and maybe 15 of them are in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. I think the first time I ran into them was at Livermore Lab 20 years ago, mm-hmm. me personally anyway. Mm-hmm. So, well, that's...
They've been in this country since the 70s. And I guess Skip was saying last night that the founder of the order, who was a resident of Hiroshima and a follower of Gandhi, and decided to combine the idea of active peace walks for justice with drumming and chanting. And he came to the U.S. to try to do something about the Vietnam War and was quite fascinated to see the correspondence between the teachings of Native Americans, the spiritual teachings of Native Americans, and Buddhism. And he felt that he sent his monks and nuns to the U.S. specifically to cultivate that connection. And they walked on the longest walk in 1978, where Native Americans walked from Alcatraz to Washington, D.C., in a body. And the monks and nuns came at the end of the line with their drums and, you know, their energy. Mm-hmm. So after that, many came to this country. I think the feeling is that in this country, the declined law has gone the farthest, and there's more need, very much need, if anything is to change in the world, if peace is ever to come, this country has to let go of its negative attitudes, of its militarism, of the desire for domination and material wealth. So that's been a focus of the monks and nuns that we know mm-hmm. in this country.
Yeah, well, that's good. And people often think of Buddhism being just internal and not activist, but in fact there are lots of Buddhist activists of all different traditions and many, and one person of many traditions.
Yes, yeah.
And I've heard that correlation actually between Tibetan Buddhism and Native American traditions and the walking, of course, is very in common there. So that's really good. Well, what got you into this, Skip, Sheil, and Louise Dunlap? How did you get involved? What moved you to do this?
With the Panzan Myoho-ji generally, you mean?
Or in whatever you want to talk about. And is all your walking for peace, these very, very long, long, long walks across, well, you talk about it because you've been at the very, very, very long walks. Has that been always with this group?
Pretty much, yeah. I met them or first heard about them in about 1982 in Groton, Connecticut, because I was part of a vigil or protest against electric boat makers of the Trident submarines. And I went with some friends, and I saw several people in orange robes wearing little funny white baker's caps, I thought. And they were uttering this nonsensical phrase, Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, which I could not remember. And I was embarrassed by them and thought they should not be part of this march. They are too strange. Over the ensuing months, I got to know two of them, Sister Claire and Brother Kato, and I found out what Namu Myoho Renge Kyo might mean and learned more about their tradition and was invited on a shorter walk. Maybe it was 2 or 3 days, and I went for about an hour, not wanting to hurt my feet. And then the next walk might have been for a morning, and then a walk for maybe a day. And I found that walking was not as tiring as I expected, nor was it as boring as I was fearful of. And so little by little, I walked more and more with them.
Skip actually walked from the Peace Pagoda in New England all the way to New Orleans, except for a few shuttles with buses. And I think that was about 5,000 miles.
Oh, you're exaggerating by a factor of two. Yeah, I would say
really?
It was 2,300 miles, 5 months in 1985, one of the hottest summers on record in the United States.
That was amazing. And that was a walk about slavery and racism, that I was on just a smaller part of it. In 1998, I walked from Washington, D.C. to Atlanta, which doesn't sound like much compared to what Skip did, but it was about 2.5 months, middle of summer, weather into the hundreds, very humid, I'm not used to that. And we went to sites where there had been slave markets. We heard stories of people who had traced their ancestry back to Africa. We were with a very diverse group of people that was struggling with its internal issues, trying to rebuild the human bridges that have been lost through racism. And I was able to retrace some of my ancestry there also and visit sites and find people who were actually connected with my family, because some of my family were slaveholders as well many generations ago. And I certainly must still be benefiting from that. So it was an opportunity to really walk into that history. Mm-hmm. But another big focus of it that was probably bigger for Skip was that we also went to places where the freedom fighters of the 60s, 50s and 60s were, and actually met some of them and got a chance to look at the history of resistance to this great injustice of our country.
And that was a walk retracing the slave trade, was it not?
It was, yes. And the organizers, after initially thinking the logical route would be Africa to the U.S., because that would mirror exactly the route, decided to reverse the path and go from the New England area down south and across through the Caribbean to the west coast of Africa and gradually down the coast of West Africa to South Africa, in order to honor Africa, to bring the spirits of the enslaved Africans back to their homeland.
Did you go to Africa and through the Caribbean yourself, personally?
Eventually, yes. I found after about 2 hours of walking with this group that, for me, it was not the pilgrimage to be on. Question, what to do? I had given up my home for a year. I had promised my support community and family that I would be on this walk for the whole way, and I was in an upset state. What I eventually did was meet the pilgrims again in South Africa. I did stay with them, as mentioned earlier, for 5 months, but I, like a lot of pilgrims who left, found alternate forms of pilgrimage that were more suited to my particular condition. And three for me. One was a journey through the Mississippi Delta, retracing aspects of my childhood growing up in Chicago that I had slowly come to understand a little bit better. The second was 4 months in the South, offering my photography in exchange for room and board to organizations who had supported the pilgrimage earlier when it had gone through. And the third alternate pilgrimage for me was being in South Africa for 4 months, photographing for organizations who were helping rebuild the country.
Mm-hmm. And that's your particular skill that you can really offer.
Skip actually has had a number of shows in interesting community venues in the Boston area since then, and has a wonderful website where people can see those shows. Do you want to give the name of the website, Skip?
www.ccae.org /tilde, and the tilde is the little mark you get when you hit the uppercase, uppermost left.
The squiggly line.
Yeah, the sideways, the snake. Shiel, S-C-H-I-E-L. Or if you forget all that, just search under Teeksa Photography, T-E-E-K-S-A.
Well, we're going to give that again at the end of the show, so if you didn't get it, then just stay tuned for another 10 plus minutes. You can get it then. And I saw a slideshow last night that you folks did that was really great with photographs and music and really gave a lot of the sense of these different walks. And I notice now, Skip Scheel and Louise Dunlap, that you're using the word pilgrimage. If you used it earlier, it slipped by me.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say what you mean by that? Because I was saying peace walk, and I'm curious.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting juxtaposition. I originally got interested because I love walking and used to do a lot of walking in the mountains and as a child and organizing big trips of that kind. And the word pilgrimage was kind of an uncomfortable word to me. It had a religiosity to it, you know, that's what people do to go to the bones of saints, and it's an old European tradition, and it just didn't sit well with me. But the terms are sort of interchangeable. It depends who you're talking to.
Mm-hmm.
Another term for them, which I like very much because I'm a Buddhist, is Dharma walk. And Dharma is the teaching of truth, and you learn the truth when you're walking on these walks. You learn about the history that you're walking into. You learn about the people you're with. You learn about the times. You learn about the lands. And it could be any of these things. The walk is for peace. It is a pilgrimage in the sense that we go to sacred sites, and they might be sites that have been made sacred by suffering, such as a slave market site. Or they might be commemorative in other ways. I think we should do a book, Skip, sometime about sacred sites that we've seen, that in this special sense. It's not the religiosity, it's the human suffering of those sites.
And sometimes the human resistance, I would imagine.
Absolutely. And for instance, Ground Zero is a very good example. The walk that I just finished in May went to Ground Zero, meaning the American Ground Zero, mm-hmm. in New York City. And that is definitely a sacred site. Americans have treated it that way. They've put up pictures of their loved ones. There's a spirit there that's, awesome in the original sense of the word. There's people trembling, and the emotions in everybody come up. Mm-hmm. You see tourists there, they don't have dry eyes. To walk to that place in a sacred way with the chanting, with the drumming, with many people focused on some form of prayer, was a very powerful experience, very healing experience.
What is your belief around this, that it makes a difference? Because I can imagine, even just for the little short, hour that I walked with the Hiroshima Flame Walk here, that it's incredibly wonderful and maybe incredibly difficult. Talk about that, the personal transformative experience, and I would like you to talk about that, and also mm-hmm. what difference you think it makes for the reason that you're actually doing it, whether it's about racism, about peace. Mm-hmm. I mean, all these things, of course, are
connected.
Yeah.
Well, we can transform ourselves, and we may not know what effect that has on others or what long-term effect it has on us, but we definitely can and do experience internal transformation. I'll give you one example. A man named Claude Thomas, a Vietnam War combat veteran, killed over 200 people that he knows of, spoke on a pilgrimage I was with him on, the Auschwitz to Hiroshima pilgrimage, about... He said, I cannot stop the wars in Bosnia or in Cambodia. I could not stop the war in Vietnam, but I can stop the war in my own heart. I can stop the suffering that I've experienced and that I continue to experience, and that if not stopped, I will impart to other people. That was his experience. My experience of inner transformation One experience occurred on the Pilgrimage of the Middle Passage when, after going through much of the South and visiting sites that were important to Martin Luther King, like Atlanta, like Birmingham, Selma, Memphis, and other places not well known but part of his history, I had a dream about Martin coming to me and, in effect, tapping me on the shoulder and saying, "Skip, as you know, I'm dead. You're alive. It's your turn." And that gave me a great deal of strength and clarity. What is my purpose on this planet? It's to engage with the issues that Martin did and continue that work along with other people.
I have experienced other transformations like that. I won't even go into them right here, but I think they dovetail into things that happen collectively and communally. When there's a large group of people, all of them doing inner work for this inner transformation, and supported by many, many people in the community who are housing us, who are feeding us, who are contributing in many ways, who are thinking about us, organizing for us, it helps to, something builds. There's something that's transferred. When you interview me, you get excited about what I say. When I see your face, I get excited. These walks become a focus for entire communities along the trail to be energized. And I told a story last night of the Flame Walk stayed in a synagogue. They were hosted by a synagogue in Albuquerque. And 2 weeks later, after they had passed through, the terrible removals of homes in Jenin started, the occupation of the Israel's occupation of the Palestinian territories became much more extreme. The people in the synagogue said, "We've got to do something." That walk was inspiring. They called up the mosque on the other side of town. They'd never had contact with the mosque, and figured out a way to organize a 7-mile walk from the synagogue to the mosque. And 300 people participated from both faith groups. They had never collaborated together. And I believe that was something that subtly got changed in the energy and in the air in Albuquerque from that walk. And it continues to reverberate. And I don't think change happens just by us going out with signs and opposing something. It changes because something inside a lot of people happens. And we never needed that more than we need it now. So we've got to do it.
Yeah. Well, that's for sure. And that example of that walk from the synagogue to the mosque is so doable, because it doesn't take a huge long time commitment or anything like that. So that could happen in any community, and it's very and the people walking together. I just the feeling of walking together with people that are feeling this. I mean, moving your body. I know as a person who doesn't sit still well, I much rather move around. This sitting meditation is really hard for me. So and seems so isolated. So walking together must be really great. And also walking together, I know, is sometimes really hard. You want to comment on that?
Oh yes.
Suffering voluntarily accepted is a very powerful force for change. And it's been part of the Christian tradition, fasting. It's part of the Islamic tradition, the pilgrimage to Mecca involves some suffering. And it's certainly part of Native American tradition. The Sundance is probably the best example. We've gotten so comfortable, afflicted by what some people are calling affluenza, that we do everything we can to avoid suffering. And in fact, it probably sounds strange to talk about voluntarily accepting suffering, but it transforms the self, it transforms others in ways that Louise was talking about. People see us on the road walking. We are walking through rain and snow, through heat and cold, and something is, it lights a fire in people. And contrary to what you'd expect, folks join us instead of saying, "These guys are a bunch of nuts, I'm going to stay away." They resonate with something that's very deeply human, because we're giving something of ourselves, of our lives, for a purpose. That probably means we believe very strongly in that purpose.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to say, too, you talked about, because the time is getting short here, but you talked last night about the walks being very interfaith, mm-hmm. and you're making some reference to that. And also I want to say I know for a fact that the Hiroshima walk is incredibly diverse, one of the most mixed groups in terms of racial, ethnic diversity. Which we don't have nearly enough of, that's for sure, in this very segregated society.
Yes. Well, that is true. A very diverse group of people can show up, and particularly when the organizers put the word out that way. The best example was the Middle Passage Walk, because it was co-organized with African Americans and the Buddhist Order. But, of course, that brings all, you talked about suffering, that recreates a little microcosm of suffering when people who are suffering internalized oppression are walking alongside of the oppressors who don't even know it. And so there's a lot of dynamics there that is part of how things get worked through. The Flame Walk somehow managed to work through those issues in a most remarkable way. It was a very harmonious walk internally.
So do they talk a lot? Or
yes. Yeah. They helped each other process judgment and anger. When someone was angry at another person for doing things the wrong way, they would talk to someone else, and they told me, I interviewed a lot of folks, that they were learning that if they were angry, it was because of something in themselves, not something that another person was doing to them, or was doing wrong, or was violating their culture. So this can happen.
Yeah. Well, I hear that all the time, but to actually get at it, especially when you're together with those other people, is quite impressive.
Yes. Well, it really is impressive, and I don't know what to say more than that, because that's just what it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's okay, because we're out of time, and it's time for the contact information, if you want to give that. You want to give your... do you want to give your website again, Skip, for your photographs?
Well, my website is www.ccae.org/Schiel, Schiel, my last name. But another website that would be of interest to listeners is about the Hiroshima Flame Walk, and it's www.dharmawalk, spelled DharmaWalk, dharmawalk.org.
Yeah, that's a wonderful site. I think if people want to contact me, they'll do it through Skip's site.
Okay, well, thank you very, very much, Skip Schiel and Louise Dunlap. Thanks for this interview, and you going on another walk real soon?
Well, I would like to go to a walk in Japan in November that goes to this from Hiroshima. I'm really concerned about the nuclear issue right now. While that walk was going, the president promulgated new policies about using nuclear weapons, and we have to stop that. I'm thinking of going to Hiroshima myself.
Okay, well, again, thanks. And my name's Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening.